please help me welcome our speaker tonight. Her name is Diane from Colts Neck, New Jersey.
Thanks, and I am an alcoholic, and my name is Diane. I'd like to thank this group, especially Jeff, for the invitation to come here this evening to share my experience, strength, and hope. It's always an honor and privilege to be able to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous and pass on what's been passed on to me. And with that, I'll say I have a sponsor, my sponsor has a sponsor, and her sponsor has a sponsor. And on, and the lineage, is what I find that Bill passed on to Bob that brought us all here today. And without that, we would surely collapse. So I'm grateful for that, my sponsor and the women in my network. And my home group is called Next Step by the Books. We meet on Tuesday nights and Thursdays. Tuesday night is a big book study meeting, and Thursday is a speaker meeting similar to this. You know, when we got here, it was such a beautiful ride, and I'd like to thank Jimmy, Mary Beth, and John for coming with me, actually, or bringing me. Thank you very much. It's beautiful up here. I don't think I've ever been in this part of Pennsylvania, and I was walking over to the ladies' room with Mary Beth, and I said, I forgot for a moment I was at Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I just said, boy, you know, a lot of people that don't know us, I think we're a glum lot. And boy, we are just so far from being a glum lot. I mean, because this is magnificent. Monday night, Labor Day, and look at the size of this group. I was, my sobriety date is November 7th, year 2000. And a little story about that, when I was brand new, you think I thought I was very smart, and I said I wanted to have 10 years. I wish I had 10 years. And this wise woman after the meeting came up to me, and she said, honey, and I had my first resentment. She said, don't drink and don't die and stick around, and in 10 years you'll have 10 years. So, and I don't know who that woman is to this day. She came and she went as quickly as she came, but you know, I got here, and I didn't ever think that this is where I'd end up. You see, because I'm going to just go to my bomb, and I'll then go back to where I was born, whatever. I never intended to stop drinking. You know, I ended up on a park bench in the city of Perth Amboy, New Jersey, where I was born and raised. And at that moment in my life, I just thought that that was my reality. You know, it talks about in the big book that I couldn't differentiate the true from the false, and that was full flight from reality. But that's what I thought was normal, and that's where I thought I would continue my life, on this park bench with a bottle of vodka in my backpack. How normal was that? The husband was gone. He took the children 3,000 miles away. Now no one was on my back, and I could drink the way I wanted. I've learned recently that the brothers that I resented loved me enough to get me arrested yet one more time so that they could find a bed in a rehab so that I could get better. And that was the end to the beginning of my recovery. And yet I was arrested, and I did end up in the hospital unit in the jail, in the county jail, for I can't even tell you how long, because I had been detoxing. I was so gone. And then they picked me up, my two brothers, and drove me to this rehab. And I remember them talking in the front seat as I sat back there saying, well, they said, when you get to the green fence, we're there. And I saw the green fence, and I said, my life is over. As I sat there in urine-soaked clothes that they gave me back after that, I arrived at the jail cell in to put back on to go to this facility. You know, and that's what I thought. My life was over. And as I opened talking about that we're not a glum lot, boy, I would have sold myself short that day, knowing what I the experience that I've had today, that my life was far from over. So just go back a little bit and tell you that I was born one of 11 children. My father's a police officer, and I had 10 brothers. My life was so soft. I wasn't a spoiled little girl. I was the second oldest of the 11. I was beat up on a regular basis. Probably because I deserved it. And that's not why I drank. And that's not why I felt less than. I had this older brother, actually, that was so perfect in my perception that my parents thought that he was that. And I could never achieve that perfection in their eyes. I always felt less than this brother. And that carried on through our high school years. He treated me very poorly, and then he got me into this all-girl junior college in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. And I was like, I showed up there, and what was I doing here? He was in Villanova at the time. And all these girls were really, really wealthy. And I came from this moderate income family, and, you know, I fit right in because they partied. You know, I picked up my first drink when I was a junior to senior year in high school, and I loved it. We lived across the bridge from Staten Island. My first drink, I got sick in the backseat of the car with my girlfriends, and I couldn't wait till the next weekend to do it again. Knowing today what I know now, I was a full-blown alcoholic back then on that day. Because when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. You know, I triggered the allergy. So I go to Bryn Mawr, and I learn how to drink. Parents are gone. My brother's really just using me to get the girls from the girls' school to go over to the frat house. So we were all in a win-win situation. But after 2 years, I transferred and went down to Miami, the university down there in Coral Gables, and now no brother, no parents, and life was like on Diane's terms. I have to just back up. I went to 12 years of Catholic school, and I grew up with a loving, forgiving God that I walked away from because I lived in my own will. I was in charge. And yet, in this family of 13, including my parents, there was really just two of us that believed in that loving, forgiving God. Everyone else had this punishing God they used to talk about. Aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid? You're going to die and go to hell if you keep doing that stuff. And I said, no, God forgives me. So I go down to the University of Miami, and I went to school in the daytime so I could party at night, and that didn't work out. So the next semester I went to school at night so I could party in the day, and that didn't work out. And somehow, some way, in 4 years I finished school, and I came back to New Jersey and had to live with the parents on their terms, and that didn't work very well because I was out in the bars every night drinking because that's what I like to do. And I did get a job, and I worked, and I was putting money together, and I met my soon-to-be husband at a bar one night, and then we got married. And he drank like I drank, and so it was good. We had a lot of fun. And I should have known, because the first night that I met him, he fell flat on his back in the middle of the bar. Something was up with that. See, all these signs God has given me, you know, I always say to my sponsees, God's tickling us, you know, and eventually he throws the ton of bricks on us. And that's what happened to me when I got to that rehab. God had finally thrown the ton of bricks on me, and it was going to be now his way, because he was done tickling. And I thank God for that. I thank you, God. So I come home, and I get married, and we start a family, and I slowed down on my drinking. I wasn't drinking every day. We were partying on the weekends. We finally bought a house and moved down the shore. Excuse me, after our third child. And so we had three boys and a beautiful family, a nice house, and I was going to be a state trooper in the state of New Jersey because I decided I was going to be a state trooper just to show my husband. He wanted to be a state trooper, and he was a union carpenter. Nothing wrong with being a union carpenter, but he could not ever get a high enough score to be accepted into the academy. And being a female, all I needed was an average score, and I could get accepted, and that's exactly what I did. And I finally won the respect. death of my dad, when I came home and told him I was entering the 105th class state police in New Jersey, he couldn't have been more proud of me. And first time ever in my life that I saw him look at me that way. And so I went through the whole academy, and now I'm drinking on weekends, and I'm drinking occasionally, and I'm drinking wine. I'm drinking a gallon of wine within 2 days over the weekend. So being the weekends 3 days, I'm drinking 2 gallons of wine over the course of a weekend. And I get this through the physical and everything, and I go and I get into the academy, and I'm there about a month, and I just say, you know, I can't do this. I miss my children. My baby was less than a year old at the time, and I had a brother move in to help out at home. And honestly, when I got sober, I had to admit to myself, to another person in God, the reason I left the state police academy is because I couldn't drink the way I wanted to drink. I blew away a career. But everything happens for a reason, you know, and I know my bottom was that what it was. And if you know what, if you end up on a park bench, just take yourself to your bottom, and that was my park bench. Doesn't matter if it was a closet, if it was just a hole in your soul, if you were just wherever your last drunk took you, thank you, God, because we're here today. And So I came home, and then the drinking really escalated, and we moved several times. The boys were growing up, and they got into high school, and now I'm drinking every single day, all day, and blackout drinker, all the time, blackout drinker. I had come to, talked about in Bill's story, and this is I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. I'm unmanageable because I'm powerless. Because I could come to on a gurney yet again, strapped down in the emergency room, open my eyes and say, how did I get here again? Over and over and over. Never swearing that I was going to stop. Never swearing that I would slow down. Never tried to change brands. I didn't do any of those things that the big book suggests that we did. Because I wanted to drink. I never wanted to stop. And then I found vodka. And then that vodka now became my master. And that was my higher power. I lived and breathed vodka. I drank vodka in my coffee. I drank vodka straight. I drank vodka with this much cran grape in a bottle or this much lemonade. And my sons would be thirsty and they'd say, Mom, can we have some? We're on the beach. It's 90 degrees. No, that's mine. And yet I told you I loved these children. And it's in the big book. And you flip the page and it says, and yet I drank again. And that's what I did. These children I told you I loved, alcohol was more important. So it wasn't too much longer after that that my husband, he just didn't know what to do with me. And so he did the best he could. And at the time, I didn't really accept that. That was the best he could. Took our sons 3,000 miles away, state of California. And that's at the point where now I was just in total oblivion because I just drank until I passed out, blacked out, or ran out. And I seldom ran out of booze. I couldn't drive, so I had to walk. I tried bicycling, but I was way too shaky to bicycle to the liquor store. I'd break so many bottles. Then I found plastic, so that worked better. But I would walk to the liquor store, and the same liquor store, you know, you hear alcoholics say, I tried that liquor store, and that liquor store, because I didn't want them to think that I was an alcoholic. I went to the same liquor store every day, and it opened at 9 a.m., and I was there at 5 to 9. Didn't matter to me. I didn't think of any shame or remorse, or I didn't feel guilty. I didn't feel, and that's what alcohol did for me. Allowed me not to feel. Allowed me not to have to cope with anything, and I was just quite happy. So we lost the house, and I ended up at one of my brother's. He took me in, and the only requirement to live there was to not drink and go to meetings. He was in the program. So I went to meetings. I did what he told me to do because I wanted some place to live, but with my bottle of vodka in my backpack. And sooner or later I was found out, and I was found out, and I came home, and there was my black bag of belongings and my bottle of vodka, and I was on the road. Came from a family of 11, and that happened from one brother to the next, to finally Dad. And Dad had enough tough love to put me out and lock the door. And that's when I ended up on the park bench. And again, thinking that that was going to be the rest of my life, and it was okay. So speak forward to I enter the rehab, thinking my life is over, and this loving, forgiving God reveals to me as a bolt of lightning, as Bill describes it from his hospital bed on his fourth trip to the hospital, and the obsession for alcohol was removed. From that day, before I even stepped foot into that rehab, the obsession for alcohol was removed and hasn't returned to today. Has not returned. And the only thing I wanted to learn from that moment forward was how to stay stopped. That's all I wanted to do, was stay stopped. Because I felt I was all filled with this spirit, and I didn't know what the spirit was, and I wasn't going to fight it, but it felt good. And I wanted to learn as much as I could to stay stopped. So I end up in this rehab, and some of us are sicker than others, for 6 months. And actually 5, they told me, but at 5, they told me you're going to be here another one more month. And I said, thank you very much. You can keep me as long as you want, because I just didn't want to miss a word on how to stay stopped. Didn't know about the big book, didn't know about these steps. Maybe a couple months into rehab, they started talking about steps 1, 2, and 3. But they drummed into me to go to meetings. Don't drink, go to meetings, get a sponsor, and get a home group. Went to a meeting, and I wanted a sponsor. And the meetings I went to were in downtown Freehold, and I certainly was not intimidating in any way to women when I got out of rehab, trust me. You were just talking about if, you know, my sponsors would say, Diane, well, I can't believe the way that you tell your, you know, how you tell your story and how you drink. I mean, look at the woman that you've become, that God has created. I said, you just ask those people that were around 10 years ago and they'll give you a full picture of the way I look. They called me a train wreck and worse, and that's what I looked like. But the women weren't forthcoming, and you know what? So I was in this intensive outpatient, and the counselor kept saying that if they're not coming to you, you need to go to them. You need to start reaching out your hand, and you need to get a sponsor. And that's exactly what I did. And see, God put everyone in my life. He connected all of those dots, because I didn't know that this woman had experience in the big book. I just sat down and listened. I thought you really were some kind of cult, because every meeting I went to, whatever it was I was feeling, pity, miserable, alone, that's what you were talking about. I was like, how do you know how I'm feeling? You're talking about this stuff. It blew me away. But I kept coming. You know, I wasn't working. I was at 2 and 3 meetings a day. And I asked this woman to sponsor me. Thank you, God, she had experience in this work. And she sat me down at the table, and we went through the big book, and I had an experience. I wrote a fourth step, and then I did a fifth step. I went on to do 6 and 7, skimping, and then went on to make amends in 9. Started to do what I thought was living in 10, 11, and 12. You see, I had an experience, but I only got relief. And I paid the price for that. You see, because I wanted to hang on to some of those defects, because they worked well for me. And all they did was kept showing up in another 10th step amends. And I went to her one day and I said, I'm really sick and tired of making these 10th step amends. You know, I'm saying people, I'm saying this. She said, well, when are you going to change? Wow. Change. I've changed my old way of thinking, my old way of doing, my old way of everything. So we moved apart and moved on, and I moved on, and I found the sponsor that I have today, you know. And I listened to her give someone a point at a meeting, and she was speaking, and she said, and she paused, and she looked up, and she said, thank you, God. And I said, I want that woman to be my sponsor. And I went up to her, and it took me months to finally call her. I kept seeing her and saying, I'm going to call, I'm going to call, I'm going to call, and I never called. And I finally called, and she took me through the work again. And I had the willingness to go to any length at this time because relief wasn't good enough. Because at that point it was, you know what, if something didn't change, just give me that bottle of vodka and I'm out of here. You know, and I didn't want to drink. And so we sat down and she shared her experience with me. You know, we talked about my unmanageability and my powerlessness over alcohol. At that time, learning too that not only was I powerless over alcohol, I was powerless over everyone and everything. Lack of power was my problem. You know, we read Bill's story and went on to there is a solution, and there's only one solution, and that's God. May you find him now. And that's what I did. And what happened is I had a God of my own understanding. And what I'm learning in this second round of having experience with my sponsor is I need to enlarge that spiritual life, enlarge that relationship. Because when my relationship is right with my God and my understanding, all my other relationships are right, good, bad, or indifferent today. And that's okay. But most importantly, my relationship must be right with God. So we took the third step and I made a decision that my life, one, my life run on self-will failed utterly, and my experience shows that. And that too, that I was going to stop playing God. And how do I do that? And what do I do? So I had to find out what was blocking me from this God of my understanding. You see, because it tells me in the agnostic deep down inside each and every one of us is the fundamental belief of God, of good. And that's where my God is. Here, deep down inside. And what I did through the course of my life was bury one problem on top of another, on top of another, until I was just buried and I couldn't solve any problems on self-will. And the power that could was now buried. So I had to unblock that. And that's what I found out when I sat down and I wrote inventory. And I had how honest, how free did I want to be, is as honest as I got on that, when I put that pen to the paper. Withholding nothing. You know, and I've learned that that's the beginning of the action. That's where I start to take the action. We sit down and we do a fifth step. And it was a very humbling experience. You know, through the course of these steps, I've learned to, in one, surrender, but become humble. Because who wants, it says in the 12 and 12, admit their faults to another person? Who wants to be honest? Certainly not the alcoholic. But did I want to be free? I did. And so that's what I did. I wanted to do. I wanted to be fearless, honest, and moral. And I've come to learn moral is just right thinking and right acting. And I wanted to do right thinking and right acting. And that's what God has helped me with, my acting and my thinking. So I did this step, and what was revealed to me was my defects. Some that I knew, some that I knew that I didn't want to know or admit to, and some that were just told to me point blank. Did you see this, Diane? Well, after it was discussed a little more, of course I did, you know. And one funny story, I kind of like to tell this, is we're in the middle of the fifth step and doing the resentment on my ex-husband, and my sponsor says to me, "Is you know you're going to thank him." And I said, "Yeah, right over my dead body, I'm thanking him." And so the wall comes up and she says, "Okay, we're going to stop right now." And we came back and we met again and we continued, and you know I did thank him. When I made the amends to him, I did thank him, because that was not the right thing to do. Because do I want to be happy, or do I want to be right, or do I want to be free? And I want to be happy and free. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. Because also in the forward to the 12 and 12, it says that these spiritual principles, these principles, spiritual in nature, is what it says. And don't quote me, but it's in the forward to in the 12 and 12. If practiced as a way of life, will relieve the sufferer of their alcoholism, and they will live a happy and whole and useful life. And that's what I wanted, a happy, whole, and useful life, because I wasn't useful to anyone, although I thought I was. But every time I was being useful, it was because Diane was getting something in turn, always about something in it for me. And I don't have to show up that way today. So freeing. So I went on and we sat down and we looked at 6 and 7 and again. And my point being is the humble. humbleness grows from the beginning of step one, I can't, yes, and two, God can. Three, I say, now I'm going to let you, God. And really let God work in my life. Okay. Then to put it on paper and then tell another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. So now I look at 6 and 7. I call them the meat and potatoes of my program. Smack in the middle of the 12 steps. Nothing happens here. I don't know how I can move forward and make an amends to anyone. Because if I don't change in 6 and 7, I go out to make amends as the same Diane. Didn't work. So I had to work on change, you know. And I can't stop lying unless I stop lying. That was a big thing for me, you know. I lied about everything. You just got to stop lying, you know. And it's not easy for a liar, you know. And I came to find out that what I was lying about, and this is how silly my thinking is sometimes, it was only to make me look better. You know, I would just exaggerate stuff about me to make me look better. And I was like, so why do I have to say that? And then, you know, now I got a conscience. So you know what I've learned? When I know better and I've begun to know better, I've been taught better, I've been taught and learned about my defects, and I must do better. Action, action and more action is what this program requires. So I make my list in 8 and I write down the exact nature of my harms to these individuals and a course of action to take that I'm going to make these amends. And I've been taught that they are direct amends. So everyone was face to face. There's some people I'm still looking for. And I know that God will make that wherever happen. There was a woman that was on my inventory, and she wouldn't take, I knew she wouldn't take a call, she wouldn't take an email, she wouldn't take a text, even set up an appointment to make this amends to her. And she's in the program, and so my sponsor just kept telling me, keep praying for the wherever, and I kept praying, God, please make the wherever possible. And lo and behold, one day after at a meeting, is I'm standing because it was a pretty packed meeting, I turn it, the door open, I turn, and she comes in. Okay, my first thought is fear, but immediately I turned to God, and now give me the strength to do what I need to do. And after the meeting, I went up to her, asked her for a minute. We went outside to the parking lot, and I was able to make amends. So, you know, to say I can't find anyone and I can't do it direct and it's by letter, it's for me, it's just a cop-out. It's me not being willing to go to any length to be free. So, unless, of course, the person's deceased, and then I've been taught to do a letter, and then I can take that to the graveside or to another person. And went on and began to live in 10, 11, and 12. You know, I find for me, in 10 is just a mini 4 through 9, that my work is completed after I've made my amends in 9, and now I get to live in 10. But when these things crop up, my fears, not if, when, so I know that they're going to because I'm human, and anger, resentment, fear, lust, lying, whatever the case is for me, is I get the 10th step amends. You know, I call someone else and discuss it, ask God to forgive me, make the proper amends if necessary, and go out and help another person. That's what I get to do today. The prayer meditation, though, in step 11 helps me a lot not to do a 10th step amends, because when I'm in conscious contact with my higher power throughout my day and I'm thinking of God and what God's will for me is and what He would have me do if I pause and take that moment, I'm not opening my mouth and putting my foot in it today. Most of the time, my days go well. And the best part is at 12, and after having had this spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and I've begun to be awakened when I wrote, put pen to paper again, and 5 when I did sat down with my sponsor, 6 and 7, 8 and 9. I've been being awakened through the whole process of these steps. But now I have to do something about that. And what am I going to do? I have to give it back. because I can't keep something that I don't give away, and what an oxymoron. It says in the first page of that chapter is that it's an experience I must not miss. The bright spot of my day, the bright spot of my life, to see luster return to tired eyes. And when I sit down with a woman at the table, and there are the tired eyes, just as mine once were, and luster return to them, life returns, is an experience beyond what I could have ever dreamt of having. It's amazing, you know. And then to end practice these principles, the other part of step 12 in all my affairs. Exactly how do I do that? And how do I know how I'm showing up in practicing these principles in all my affairs? And all I can do is look around and ask my family members, or ask you can ask my boss, you can ask my children, those children I told you I loved, that I have warm relationships today with. One is back in the state of New Jersey, another is visiting in the state of New Jersey, and one is still out in the state of California. They actually call me. It's amazing. You know, I never gave up in them. When I was in rehab, this is a funny story. I said, as soon as I get out of here, I'm going right out to California, and I'm going to get my sons. Well, I've been living in the state of New Jersey now for 10 years, and I haven't gone out to California to go get my sons, but they're back in my life. And that's as a direct result of this transformation, of being recreated, of being reborn. So recently, yet again, I sit down with my sponsor to the table and revisit this program. Because you see, for us alcoholics, I don't know about you, but for me, I need sometimes an annual or biannual house cleaning. And it tells us in the 12 and 12, we may need a semi or annual house cleaning. I don't just do this one time and I don't ever do it again. And here I do, we sit down and I again say, God, I can't. Now this applies now to alcohol. The problem has been removed. Those 10-step promises, some of my favorite in the book, you know, I'm placed in a position of neutrality. I don't have to swear it off anymore. You know, it's not the problem. I'm the problem and I'm still here. And I don't want to be the problem. I don't want to be the problem. I find myself distancing myself from family members whom I love, who loved me enough to begin this journey for me. And I'm distancing myself because they're not showing up the way that I want them to show up. So I do another inventory, and that's revealed to me. I didn't think I was picking and choosing who I was going to let in my life and who I wasn't. Here, I just said this to my sponsor. This handful of people can do the same thing as this handful of people in my life today. But I resent them and not them. How's that possible? You're doing the same thing. I had to take a look at that. And it was revealed to me by my sponsor. I couldn't take a self-appraisal because I could justify that. You know what? They're just not doing what I want. They don't have a program and they don't know better. There's their person to cop out. You know, it's not about them. It's about me. I want to be free. I want to be rid of this stuff. And that's what I get to do in the fourth step. Face and be rid of. And I do another fifth step, and again, more is revealed again, yet again. And I get awakened and renewed and refreshed in my program, in myself, and in my recovery. And the best part of it is in the relationship I have with God. It keeps growing, and it keeps glowing. And the closer I'm growing towards God, further I am away from Diane first and my defects that are eventually going to take me back to that drink. Because that's how it's going to happen. You know, it doesn't happen suddenly. I move away from God slowly, and then the principles in this program, and then the meetings, and then I'm self-reliant. That's what was revealed to me in my fifth step, in my fears actually. There were many, but it boiled down to is my fear of being alone. And bottom line was that was because of no God and self-reliance. Self-reliance can't work with God. So when I'm living in self, when I'm thinking I can run the show, when I have my best interest and know your best interest, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble, and that's where I was. So we just recently finished the sixth step, and I went through my defects and listed them all, which was pretty cool because, you know, the last time we did it, I listed my defects, and then I had at the same time next to them wrote down and brought to my sponsor what would God have me do or be instead. And this time she asked me just write down my defects, and I brought them to her, and we talked about the sixth and seventh step. And am I just asking for God to remove these defects, or am I humbly asking God to remove these? You know, how much do I want to? And they're not ever going away for me. They're just being reduced, and that's okay. And they're not glaring. I'm living in God consciousness. You know, I'm living in right direction, and that's God's direction. All I can do here, and again, it talks about it in the 12 and 12, is aim towards perfection, and that's toward God-likeness for me. And that's what I try to do on a daily basis. I'm going back to meet her next week, and I'm going to bring my new eight-step list, and I'll be directed on the amends that I'm going to make. I need to just bring her the list with the direct nature of my harms to these individuals, and then I'll be directed. You know, my sponsor says all the time, always, to remain reachable and teachable. And when I go and sit down at that table with her, I stay teachable. Because if I think I know more than her, I don't need her. And I need my sponsor. I need my sponsor because she has never guided me in anything but right, God-like direction. And I'm so blessed and I'm so grateful for her in my life. And it's not easy. You know, it says that several times in the big book. This program's not easy. It's very simple. The directions and the requirements are outlined in the first 164 pages. All I have to do is follow them. And certainly your typical alcoholic isn't a follower. I certainly wasn't. I was always thinking I was running the show. And today, you know, I've humbled myself enough to know that I don't know. And that's why I need to keep coming to meetings. Because you tell me what it's like when you go out. And it's not all that grand because you're back. And thank God you made it back. Because some of us don't get to come back. You know, some of us, this disease wants us in jail, institutionalized, or dead. And it would rather have me dead. And I know that my record of my drinking shows that I should be. And only by God's grace I'm here today. And that's because God has a plan for me. You know, He's not done using me, my good and bad, to be helpful, useful, effective, and present today. You know, when I was drinking too, I had several DUIs, and I neglected to mention that. Oh, and why that cropped up is because how stubborn and arrogant and above and know-it-all I was is that when I went to court for my DUI, the judge was sending me to jail. I mean, to rehab for 6 months, but he was going to send me to jail for 5.5. And I said, excuse me, Your Honor, you know what? If you think I'm going to rehab for 6 months any longer that you thought you were sending me to jail, send me to jail. So I went to jail just to end up in that rehab that I eventually ended up in. So I needed some more lessons. And honest, I'm a sick person. You know, my sponsor affirmed that. She said, so much sicker that you're still sick by you. That's why I keep coming. That's why I keep doing this work. And that's why I get to have an experience that I can pass on and help others. You know, I love working with the women I work with. I'm able to sit down at the table with them and just take them through this work. And that's awesome. You know, my life has changed, you know, in these 10 years that I can't, you know, 10 years ago being on that, it seems like it's ancient history. Like that was so long ago. And the things and the people that have come across my life in my recovery, some people have come and then they've gone because they presented a lesson that I needed to learn. Some have stayed for a while for me to learn yet another lesson, and some have stayed, you know. And they're all gifts from my God and my understanding. Those brothers that I told you about that I recently put on this new inventory, and I'm going to be able to make amends to them, I'm sure, shortly. I get to already experience a different relationship. I was with them over the weekend and on several parties over the summer with family parties, which I used to dread going to. And then I just convinced myself, okay, I'm going to have a good time. And that was just like a different way of saying, I really don't want to go, but I'm going to go because I need to go and I'll be happy. And now today, I actually look forward to going. You know, I've been able to sit down with them and have a conversation. There's still a lot of work I have to do. My relationship with my father is so estranged, and that's of my own making. That's a hard thing to admit. I keep it there. I'm not the daughter that he deserves, and I know that. And I know this, it's going to change after this ninth step. I know that because I don't want it to be estranged. You know, I'm 80 years old, and it's on my resentment list. My sponsor said, the first thing she asked me was, how old is he? I said, he's 80. She said, he's 80 years old? Like, and I have a resentment to my dad. Like, I just wanted to, like, just die. Just, like, how ridiculous. But I did, and I had to look at that, but I had to look at why was I holding on to this. He was on my first inventory. He was on my second inventory. Now again, he's on my third, all for a different reason, all for a different resentment. When am I going to let it go? How free do I want to be? And this is where I want to be today. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. I didn't get here overnight. I didn't create my defects overnight. They were an acquired taste over the years. And they're not going away. Way, you know, it's by practice, and that's what I've learned, is I have to practice in this program. One of my favorite steps after 6 and 7 is step 11, because in step 11, I have actually, there's three disciplines in that step for me. Tells me on retiring in the evening, I get to first review my day. And it was also taught to me why we start there. Because my day is past, now I'm going to look at how I showed up in all of your lives. Was I loving and kind, useful, effective? Was I present? Or was I critical, unkind? You know, I get to review my defects. Did I live in fear and act out in anger? Was I sarcastic? And then I ask God to help me to do it better tomorrow. Ask Him to forgive me and have quiet time. And I take that to rest. And I want, upon awakening, which is the next discipline, is those requests that I've asked God to help me to be less pitying or more honest, more kind, loving, compassionate. One of my favorite words is in the big book when it says to be compassionate, kind, loving, compassionate, and kind, and it uses the word kindliness. Kindliness is such a soft word. What a place to be in kindliness. And they don't always show up that way. Even in my thinking, and you know, I used to justify that, okay, I'm not acting out on being unkind, but I'm certainly thinking it. And that keeps me held in bondage in my own thoughts. Because sooner or later, those thoughts are going to turn out into an action. You know, I know I'm never going to be perfect. I know that I can only aim towards that, and that's why I keep going back to 6 and 7 here. It's because for me today, right now, today, is I'm working on these changes, to asking God to remove from me that which stands in the way of being effective, that which stands in the way of being the person He wants Diane and created Diane to be, because I know that that's His purpose for me, because I'd be gone. I would be gone. My blood alcohol levels on those times that I was stopped by the police were over 5, 5.6, 5.8. By the record, death. They couldn't understand. Judge said, you need to thank this police woman because she saved your life. You know? And how do I get to do that today? I don't know who she is. I thanked her that day in court because I was told to. I get to thank her every day. I'm sober and I can show up and be useful and helpful. That's how I get to thank her. That's how I get to show up and make my living amends. You know, my mom passed away when I was active alcoholic, and I was never able to make a face-to-face amends to her. I'm her only daughter. The day she died, her 10 sons were at her bedside. I was home drinking because that was more important. I lived in that shame, remorse, and guilt for a long time. And I used to get this knife and this knot in my gut every year in my early sobriety on her birthday and the anniversary of her death. And then through a meditation, I had an experience that I was able to, in this meditation, reveal to me that my mom only wants me to keep doing what I'm doing, and that's one, staying sober, and two, helping others. And I wasn't supposed to see her in this meditation because I went and I was looking all over for her, and they just, it's not your time. Just go and go do what you're doing. And it came out of that with the shakes. And I don't know if any of you have experiences in meditations, but it's a part of my program that's such a gift. And when I did it, again, it's your alcoholic, when I did it once and I liked it, I wanted more. And so I've been to many meditation groups and classes to enhance my experience, which it talks about in step 11, is seek those that can help us in more prayer or in meditation or whatever it is that we need help with. You know, we certainly can help each other, but some of us aren't experienced in other fields. Some of us are, and if I find you, I'll reach out to you because I can stay teachable today. It's not about my ego, because when it is, again, I'm in trouble. So the third discipline is in my day-to-day business, you know, and that's pretty much what I was just talking about, is my walking around hours, how am I showing up, and for the longest time at work, and it's kind of amusing because my boss one day was telling me about a family member and then that was suffering from alcoholism, and he said to me, "And what do you know about that, Diane?" Just was a question, and I just fell in my chair. I was like, whoa. I didn't reveal to anyone. I was new on this job just a few years that I was in the program. And by him telling me his story of his family member, I felt the need to reveal to him that I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I once was like that without going into detail, and now I'm recreated. I'm reborn. And so he kind of takes that and runs with it today. And when he hears me speak condescending, he'll shout from his office, "Condescending, condescending." Or he has this little song, and some of you may know it. He sings, it goes like this, "Little Miss, Little Miss." And I used to say to him, "What does that mean?" Well, the rest of that phrase in the song is, "Little Miss Know-It-All." So he doesn't say the whole song. He just sings, "Little Miss." And I know what he's talking about. But he pulls me back. You know, he's like letting me know, like, okay, you need to, whatever. But I have this prayer on the right side of my wall. It's a workplace prayer. And, you know, no one that I come in contact with on a daily basis deserves my wrath or my anger or my sarcasm, no matter what is going on in my life. And it could be my son yet again relapsing, a death in the family, whatever is going on. When I walk into work, that's checked at the door. Okay, I need to show up as an employee and do the best job I can. And with that, I ask God to help me to be a worker among workers, just like I ask him to be a friend among friends, a family member in the family. You know, I don't have to stand out and stand alone today. Although sometimes the ego wants me to, and then, you know, that's why I call my sponsor, and you know what she tells me? And I call her all the time, and I know what she's going to say. And I used to say to my friends, it's like nails on a chalkboard. Like, she says it all the time, "You're playing God again, Diane, just quit." You know, and it's true. I show up and start to run the show, and I start to play God. And what happens, it utterly fails. I pay for it. I'm miserable, I'm fearful, or I'm angry. And again, I open mouth, put foot in, and I have to make an amends. So So those are also, you know, talking about the end of the 12th step is how, you know, how am I showing up, practicing these principles in all my affairs, not just the ones I want to, you know, not just being good at an AA meeting and talking to a newcomer afterwards and looking good. No, I don't have to look good. I have to do good. No one needs to know that I do good, because God always knows that I do good. And then he knows when I don't do good. And then I get a chance to ask for forgiveness, help someone else, make amends if necessary. So I have to practice and apply these principles, all of them, in all my affairs, all the time, to be happy, joyous, and free. Thanks for letting me share, and thank you again for the invitation.